Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On today's podcast, my guest is writer-actor Annie Lindner, back to dive deep into the finale of her series, A Beginner's Guide to Grief. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I'll distract everyone while you dab your eyes on Big Squid. Welcome to today's episode. I'm so grateful that you have joined me, and it's another fantastic catch-up with writer-actor Annie Lindner, who returns to talk about her award-nominated show, which you can find on SBS, A Beginner's Guide to Grief. Now, the first time I had Annie on the show, we spoke obliquely about the show because I wanted you to watch it and I didn't want to give anything away, and there was lots of stuff that I really, really wanted to discuss because I also know the backstory of what happened in Annie's real life. But at the same time, I didn't want to... I know you're smart. Like, I know that if I say a specific thing, you will pick up on it, and then suddenly, you know, you'll kind of work out what's going on. So I didn't want that to happen. So we were very careful about how we talked about the series. But now that a lot of you have seen it, and also a lot of you have loved it as well, I seem to have a 100% strike rate on the feedback that I've gotten to this wonderful show. We're really going to dig into it. We're going to dig into the themes and the real life experiences that influenced Annie's story. Now, if you're in a bit of a fragile place, our conversation goes into some real stuff and talks about deep emotions, and that's probably around the halfway mark. Of course, this is done with empathy and this is done with care, but I'm just letting you know so you can be prepared. And this year has been a bummer for many people, and I do not doubt a lot of you are exhausted from the constant pressure that 2022 has placed on you and all of us. But I need to stress, I think this conversation is real. I think it is cathartic. And I also believe you'll take away a lot from this. And also, I have to stress, like life itself, it's all sorts of emotions. This chat is funny. It's full of joy. Like when we set up to record this, Annie had to push back the recording time by 15 minutes because she was finding out that the show's been nominated for awards. So, you know, there's a lot going on here. There's the full spectrum of emotions, and you will be wrapped when you're finished, and it'll give you a lot to ruminate on after you've left the conversation behind. A few quick notes before we bring in Annie. There will be a Patreon-only episode of the podcast, the Dispatches from the Fury Road edition that will be dropping on Thursday. If you'd like to sign up to Patreon to be able to access special podcasts, scripts, discounted tickets to live events and ad-free episodes, and more. You know, there's heaps going on over there. Please head to patreon.com/Justin Hamilton _Big Squid. Your money goes towards the production of this podcast and helps me maintain the high goals I set myself for each episode. So everything from the research that goes into episodes like the Space Odyssey episodes or, you know, the Past the Amel stuff, and also the short stories, you know, as I think I said in the last podcast, that latest one, Living in the Shadow of Your Song, like that took nearly a year to produce. You know, a lot goes into it. So just so you know, anything that you put into the podcast financially comes right back at you in the quality of production. Melbourne friends, I'm back in your city soon. That's so nice to be able to say this. And I'll be appearing at Comedy Republic with my first solo show in 3 years. It's called Little Victories. It will be on the 26th of November. My listeners can score a discounted ticket by using the promo code PODCAST. So if you're coming along and you're trying to avoid all the state election malarkey, I'm there. It's me. You can come along. I'll take your mind off it for at least an hour. The show in Sydney was great. And look, between us, I had to jettison about 20 minutes of material to bring it in under the hour. I asked my techie, can you give me a light at 45 to let me know where I'm at? And to be honest, going in, I was like, God, I hope I get to the 45-minute mark and, you know, can then go into my finale and don't have to pad. And then I got to that point and I honestly had to throw out about 20, 25 minutes of material. And anyway, turns out I have some jokes for you. Anyway, I'd love to see you and look forward to returning to Melbourne again. It's so weird because, you know, my first gigs in Melbourne were in 1994. My first shows in Melbourne were at the 1995 Melbourne Comedy Festival. I lived in Melbourne for 13 years. It's so weird to think that I've lived in Sydney for 7 years now and have barely been back to Melbourne in that time, you know, especially in the last 3 years. So, heck, I don't even know if you remember me. I could turn up and be like, yep, all right, well, I'll just talk the techie through it. But anyway, hopefully you do remember me and want to come along to this show. I'll let you know what is coming up next week at the end of the podcast, but now it is time to bring in my delightful pal, Annie. Well, we were meant to be talking a little bit earlier, but someone was too busy getting phone calls first thing on a, what, Sunday morning about an actor nomination. So congratulations are due. And also, what is the nomination?
Thank you. it's in the digital category. So, yes, it's a new category this year. Kind of means that we're also strangely like up against a lot of content creators, as in like, you know, TikTokers, right, and YouTubers and stuff. So it's an interesting category, but freaking honored to be a part of it. Yeah. And also to see so many of my good mates in the same category. It's been really lovely. It's been a very nice thing to wake up to. Yeah. So, yeah.
I always think I don't like awards in general. I think awards in general kind of can bum out the artistic side of things. And between awards and box office, you know, I feel like we often concentrate on the worst parts of what someone is creating. But having said that, to be nominated is fantastic. And if you win, you're breaking new ground because this has never been a category before. So you could be right ahead of the curve. If you're up against TikTok people and YouTube, et cetera, I love how I say TikTok people, like they are completely different people. Yeah, well, but
we're down with the lingo, right?
Absolutely. Does this, does your show kind of look like, is your show considered traditional in comparison?
That I almost feel a bit concerned about that. Right. Like, it's just, you know, it's just such a different format, and it's so like there are so many forms of storytelling and formats for it that now exist. It's just tricky because what we've tried to do is I guess, look at a more traditional form of storytelling, but condensed it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a short form series. So ultimately it does fall into that same category because they're what, 10, 12 minute episodes. But what we've tried to do is as much as humanly possible, condense it so that it feels like you're still watching a half hour series. You know, it should feel that rich and juicy and complex. And, you know, that was why it was so important to me to ensure that every character had kind of their own little arc of sorts. Once again, you've got a very tight framework to work with, but I guess we're the trad right. Jazz. We bring the trad jazz to the category. And there ain't nothing wrong with that, you know? But we're doing something new and different at the same time.
Yeah.
I feel. But it's really nice to be a part of that gang. And there are there's definitely a couple of other shows that are in the same category. That are doing a similar thing, like using that short form framework to tell richer and more complex stories in a very short frame, period of time, and doing it really beautifully. So, the competition is fierce.
Right, that's great. No, well, the nomination is, that's the win, because it is the acknowledgements, and now it just comes down to taste.
Totally. And it's just like, it is such an honor to know how much, because no one knows how much time and work and heart you put into something, or how long that journey has been. You see the finished product. And I know that that's been the journey for everyone that's in the category. But just to be honored by your peers and in the Australian industry, it really does mean something just to be nominated. Like that's the win, really.
People don't realize, I think they can realize intellectually, but emotionally it's very difficult to get your head around the fact that you spend a lot of time alone with the initial thought. And it's not just the working out of the idea. It's all the weird shit that bubbles up at the worst moments. Like when you, for whatever reason, a little bit of doubt just creeps in. And doubt can come from many strange places. Like doubt can come from someone giving you a bit of criticism on the work that doesn't really vibe with what you're going for. But it can also sometimes come from someone saying, this is great. And then you think, oh, is this great? Well, I better follow through with this. And then the doubt can kick in that way.
Totally. Oh, the ego mind is a fascinating thing. It just is just shitting on your parade the whole time, like any day of the week. And I am a bit of a master of that. Like, I don't need anyone to give me any criticism because I'm the fucking expert of that myself.
Right.
At any given moment, and like the doubting thing. I mean, it's just constant. Like she's a mad bitch in my head. But I'm learning to live with her. Of course, then on top of that, you've then got people giving their opinion. And that's fine. Like I'm actually finding it fascinating how you hear that, how you respond to it in any given moment. And it really does depend on what's going down for you in that particular moment. And it might be the way that someone says that they like it. You're like, oh, that hurts.
Right.
Like it doesn't, you know, you just, we're goddamn meaning machines, you know, that's all our brains are doing is like creating meaning out of sounds, noises.
Yeah.
The way that someone delivers their words, you know, like we have no fucking idea what anyone's thinking.
No.
So kind of it is strangely, it's been relieving or cathartic to realize after so much work, actually it doesn't matter. Like it doesn't really matter what anybody thinks if it feels right in your heart.
Yeah.
then I think you're onto something pretty good. As long as you're not hurting anybody in the process, you're probably in the right field. If it feels right and you've got good intentions, just trust that critics will say whatever they say. But, you know, for me, it's already been worthwhile just because it's felt like a very rewarding process and very humbling to work with so many extraordinary artists, but also to just hear from strangers that like message you out of the blue and say, you don't know me, I saw your show, this is what it did for me, and this is, you know, this is my experience. That in itself has just made me go, ah, it was totally worthwhile. Just even if it was one person that felt that way, it's already been, like, it's already paid off. So anything else is a bonus.
Yeah, to take something personal and make it broad enough that other people can find their ways into relating to something takes a lot of skill and takes a lot of, it's, you know, you do have to have a certain amount of courage about yourself to go forward with that. I'm curious, how do you overcome those moments of doubt, and can you sometimes recognize the different versions of them? And the reason I ask is I'm well behind at this point in the year with something that I'm working on. And the reason I'm behind it is I had some doubt kick in, which came from fatigue. Like physical and creative fatigue hit me all at once on a few days ago anyway. And so I've had to actually slow down. And even though the timeline is, you know, becoming shorter and shorter, I knew it was more important than long term to kind of check out for a couple of days.
Yeah, it's so important. I think, I don't know, I feel constantly, it's so easy to put yourself in comparison, especially as creatives, when we're just, you're putting your heart on your sleeve all the time. Like, you just unzipping yourself and saying, here's my gizzards, what do you think? Like, take a gander, have a look. And that's also the place that our creativity is coming from. It's like it's internal, so it's very personal, and it is exhausting. And if you are burning out, which I am really good at, I'm learning more. And I say this because I know that we've both acknowledged the burnout thing this week. The longer I put off acknowledging the burnout or doing something about it, as in actually stopping and giving yourself a break, the more that then bleeds into the following week, the following month, the following 6 months. Yeah. Like it's dangerous, and it will find a way to let you know that you have to stop. And I think the longer you leave it, the more our body, like physically, will stop us in our tracks and say, you are not hearing me, like you are not listening. If you want to be delivering all of this output, I need to be refueled. Yeah. Please stop.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing. And I've literally just overnight decided that I'm going to take a week off. I've never done this in my life, but actually take a week off where no one can contact me. I'm going to an island. I've never actually treated myself to a holiday in my life, but I just realized that I need to have zero input, like zero information flooding in, because I'm not functioning right now. I've got really exciting projects ahead of me, and I can't deliver on anything. I'm being really honest. Like, I'm not one of those super high functioning people that can just like go and go and go and just push through without there being consequences. And I'm sick of the consequences. So I think I'm starting to learn how to manage it. But I think the self-doubt thing, you know, talking about, I think it's a good thing to acknowledge if you're working on a creative project, that like if you've got doubt coming in, that is a sign of maybe fatigue or burnout early stages. Like it's letting, it's your brain letting you know that you're not thinking clearly, like you need refueling, or you need some restorative time. But also the closer you get to a deadline, the more those fuckers, those voices are going to come in and tell you you're a piece of shit. Yeah. Like, how dare you? How dare you think you have a right to tell a story? They'll just, those voices will come in, I think, thicker and faster the closer you get to a deadline. Yeah. So I think it's that mental game. But in terms of overcoming it, honestly, the one thing, oh, I say this really, I shouldn't hesitate to say it. The one thing that is keeping me going at the moment when I am just going, your ideas suck and who are you to share this story? Just like treat yourself to an evening of whatever is on your streaming service. Like, I'm sorry, this is the most amazing time in history in terms of like the output. There is just pure saturation of stories everywhere. Every streaming service is hungry for more content. But as a result, there's also a percentage of that that's really not, I don't think it's well thought through. Right. I don't think it's well considered. You know, just kind of your average stuff. Watch something that, you know, you feel is suspiciously average or makes you cringe a bit. Just watch one episode of something and go, like, get to the end of that and go, these people made it. And, you know, like, good on them. So what the fuck are you doing? Just get on with it. It's not, you know, it's not going to be that bad.
That's a really good way of looking at it.
I know that's terrible, but like bad art can really help inspire good art, I think.
Well, it's funny because I think I may have told you on the phone that I saw, I got an opportunity to see Black Adam, and it was honestly like I've never been angrier at people giving it an okay review, and it's like I just thought it was an awful experience, and I never buy into that it's for kids, because I think that's who I'm thinking of. Like, kids deserve something better as well, you know. But it was I quite like a loud movie. I like feeling it at the cinema, but I came out of it like I'd had a concussion. Like, I'd just been pounded for 2 hours with, you know, kind of no up and down or blending of the noises, or, you know, having bits of silence, nothing like that. And it was right at that point where I was feeling burnt out. And so the way I kind of got out of it was I watched 45 minutes of a movie that I really like, and and didn't feel the need to watch all of it, just watched 45 minutes of it. And then I watched a Juliette Binoche film called Let the Sunshine In.
Beautiful.
So good, right?
Beautiful.
A grown-up story about a grown-up person who is functioning in their job and a little bit bad at relationships, and it was great.
Relatable.
Yeah. Completely relatable. And you kind of use that to kind of even out the what had been going in. And then on Saturday, I just watched some basketball. I put the phone away. I just watched some basketball.
Brilliant.
Then did some shopping. And then I did just really boring admin work, because at least that kind of gets things moving. And then this morning, tackled that one of the things that I started to have doubt over, and what I wrote this morning isn't perfect, but I've got back into it.
Oh yeah, there's a real key red flag word, perfect.
Yes.
So I have it literally plastered over my walls. I will find any quote I can during the creative process. If I'm writing a show, anything that I have, Brené Brown she's the fucking queen of it. Yeah. Like, she has wonderful quotes. Just Google them. whichever one hits you in the heart the most, like stick it on a fucking, I don't know, like a, what, like a poster size printout on your wall.
What was her name again? Sorry?
Renee Brown.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. You know, perfectionism is the thief of creativity. Yes. It just stops us in our tracks. And I realize now, like, nothing I do is ever going to be what is necessarily in my head. And it, what it does is just stop me in my tracks. It's like mud setting around your ankles. Like, it will, and it does it really effectively. It will beat me up to the point that I just go, I can't keep working on this project because it's just not good enough. And this whole good, not good enough thing is like, for me, if I hear that conversation in my head, I know that I'm in that territory, the perfectionist territory, like whatever is your phrase that you have programmed in your head since you were probably a kid, like know what that sentence looks like and just fucking give it the finger, like just bird and carry on, because it is all it wants to do. All it wants to do is protect you and stop, but it wants to stop you in your tracks. So yeah, the perfectionism thing is like, it's a killer. And you know, like you've just you've totally nailed the how to deal with doubt and fatigue. Like you've done the perfect combination of things. You've stopped what you were doing. You've gone and seen something terrible, and then you've watched something wonderful, and then you've gone completely away from anything that's in your purview of your creative realm, and you've watched some fucking great basketball. Right. Like, or, you know, like no matter how that basketball game goes, it's you are sending your energy elsewhere and letting your brain have a break from what you strive for and what you pour your heart into and you pour your energy into. I think that's so key. Cause, and I was going to say, like, I think the other part of, I can feel my Lutheran guilt already pressing down on me like a cloud saying, you know, talking about other people's bad art. No one sets out to make bad art. And I think that's really important to acknowledge is like, everyone's just fucking trying, man. Yeah. Like everyone is just trying to do their thing. Yeah. But you know, sometimes it doesn't work or it doesn't resonate for you. And I think it's just going like, you know, identifying if something does not resonate for you and you want to call it bad art or a piece of shit, you don't have to tell other people that. But if that makes you like kind of frustrated, like, oh man, they got money to do this. They got like, or, oh man, they got money to create this show with an amazing group of humans and they're telling a story that's not changing anything, or like they're telling the same old fucking, you know, like whatever it is that makes you feel a bit shit about things, get angry about it instead. I'm terrified of conflict and anger, so I'm just learning this now, but like let yourself get really angry about it for a night and be like, fuck, like there's all this money out there and they're making shit like this, like use it, just use it, pour that anger in, and then watch something or listen to something that blows your mind. Like listen to any David Bowie album. Listen to a poet reading their work. Listen or watch a film that just continually blows your mind. Like you don't, and like you said, you don't have to watch the whole thing, but give yourself the permission to see art at its most exceptional and go, well, I'm probably not that.
Right.
So, but I'm not the other option either.
Yeah.
So just get on with it. Like it,
you
it's kind
can,
of
you can still out. Aim for the big thing though. Do you know what I mean? Like that's what you, you know, let the other thing be in the back and you know, aim high.
Fire. Damn straight.
You know, I'm a big believer in if you can turn anger into spite, I think spite is fuel. Do you know what I mean? Like spite is something that you can go, yeah, well, fuck you. I am going to do this. And that's, you know, like spite is not a good feeling to have, but you can, I think it's the easiest of the anger group to use.
It, It's a lot healthier than bitterness,
right?
Which is what will happen if you don't do the thing that you feel called to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At some point, that bitterness is going to overwhelm your body and your mind. So just, you know, if you want to avoid bitterness in the world, just keep doing what you're doing. I think that's key. But, yeah, like absolutely, use it as fuel.
Yeah.
And take your pressure, like take the pressure off yourself. Like let yourself say it's not going to be perfect, but who fucking cares? Like I'm making a thing. Because if you don't make it, that's not a good option.
Yeah. Like and nothing's perfect. Like, you know, The Godfather is a perfect film. But when you watch it, there's a point where Sonny takes a swing at his brother-in-law and he misses by 75 meters. Like, he's so far away and the sound effect comes in and the actor reacts as if he's been punched, but you know what, who gives a shit?
Yeah, who gives? Because and those things, oh my god, you end up sweating so much over stuff like the sound. Oh my god, the sound in my show, I was losing my mind about the details of that and the things that I felt were like not landing or weren't quite the sound I was looking for, and just going like, it's got to be perfect.
Yeah.
And then going, you know what? Maybe it won't be. Yeah. And that's going to be fine. And like hardly anyone notices that shit anyway.
I noticed it. I noticed the birds.
You did. You noticed, and I really, don't get me wrong, I really appreciate that. Like, I think you're one of only two people that's mentioned the specificity of those, like, audio elements, and I love that so much.
Oh, man, it gave me a very a vivid picture of growing up in West Croydon on Bedford Street, where opposite was the Croydon High School, and there was... Mm-hmm. Two concrete cricket pitches in nets right next to the fence. And I would hear those birds on a Saturday or Sunday morning, and I would hear the crack of a bat hitting a ball or the ball hitting the chain fence.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, that just gave me shivers. Yeah. Like the specificity of that, even like, those things are so nostalgic. Like that's so, that's delicious. I love that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, there's, now I'm trying to think what the name of the film that Tilda Swinton did in the last, like it's only come out in the last 12 months. I went to see it in the cinema. It is an intense ride. Like it's a very specific style of storytelling. But the whole thing is that she's obsessed with this one sound. And she's trying to get...
Memoria?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, have you
seen
it?
No, I haven't. But someone was telling me about it literally yesterday.
Yeah. Really? Well, it's certainly a worthwhile watch. I mean, one, because it's Tilda. So all hail Tilda. But I went to this film not knowing anything about it except that I loved the still shots and Tilda Swinton was it. I've got to see this film. And, you know, I don't know how many minutes into the film she's sitting in this room just trying to explain the specificity of this one noise that is just like terrorizing her. Like it just won't leave her alone. And I was like, oh, look, there's me. That's me. That's the last, like, 6 months of my life. Just going insane. But I love that someone's gone, actually, we can make a film about that. Like, it's a very niche thing, but also an amazing film.
That's what this podcast is slowly becoming, is becoming more and more niche because, A, my interests in mainstream are waning to such a drastic peak where I just don't find mainstream stuff to be at the moment challenging in any way, like not even really taking big swings, but also like why fucking talk about it when there's like
so many other people doing
other people
it.
Are talking about it, you know,
let them do it.
Yeah, they're fine.
Yeah, that's the other freeing thing. Let everyone, like, let the majority take care of that shit. Like, let the majority tell really safe stories,
yeah,
because they're always going to do it, because that's, you know, it's safe.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Just let them. There's so many other people doing it. Don't worry about it.
I would much rather this podcast be talking about Tilda Swinton, and I just rewatched Michael Clayton, and I had not watched it in quite a few years. And at the end of it, I was like, hey, why don't I watch this every year? Like, it is fantastic. But Tilda Swinton, like the first time you see her in that film, she's having a panic attack in the cubicle, yeah, and it's, yeah, it is. It sounds really weird, but it's mesmerizing.
Yeah. I mean, there's the ultimate word to sum up. I mean, there's many words that sum up Tilda, yeah, but like, I mean, she is truly mesmerizing in everything she does.
Yes.
I don't know. You know, and that's what I mean. Like, look at a great artist and go, like, I know I have no chance of ever being anything like her, but I'm also not trying to be.
Right.
But she is so inspiring, like, just to, and to see her body of work and, oh, God, what a life she's had. You know, what, just endlessly fascinating to be able to, to be in a position as an artist to choose the kind of stories that she's been able to tell. Like, there's someone that's not at all interested in, like, well, how popular is this going to be?
Yeah.
How much, you know, like, how much money is attached to it? Because, you know, like, she's clearly, that is not her realm.
Do a couple of big budget things here and there, get your money up, and then go and make interesting art.
Something delicious.
Yeah.
Just keep it delicious.
So something that I wanted to talk to you about.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Your own series, which, you know, the last time we talked, it was, you know, we were, it had just come out, so I wanted people to see it, so I didn't want to give too much away. But now that it's been out for a while, and I've been getting a lot of great feedback from people who have watched it, who have really enjoyed it and loved it, and people who didn't know your work before either. So that's a really nice way to introduce you to them. But it's interesting, and I'm curious to know where this was a fictionalized version of an experience that you had. And once again, this is where I was talking about before, you know, there's the words courage and bravery are thrown around too much about all kinds of art. But there was a level of integrity that was invested in your show that came from real life. And were there times where you were thinking this is too much? Like, were there moments in the series that you thought, I don't know if I'm kind of ready to put that out there, even though it's through this fictionalized storyline?
No, honestly, I think maybe there were a few times when it came to the actual filming, when we were in production and the camera was on me and I realized how far I'd gone into lived events.
Right.
I think, you know, a prime example of that, it was actually on the last day of the shoot, I think. It was either the second to last or the last day of the film shoot. I had to do the scene. I had to do the bathtub stuff where I was underwater, not breathing, which is really hard.
It looks really hard. As someone who doesn't like his head underwater, that looks terrifying to me.
Yeah. And amazing where your brain goes when you're having to do it over and over again. And I would be under for, you know, like quite a period of time, and I'd been training myself for that. But when it came to filming, my brain went to some pretty dark places because it had been there before. And it was like, it was triggering memories of kind of where I'd been in the past. So that was confronting. And then that was followed by having to do the scene with the beautiful Caitlin McDougall, who plays my mother, where I'm trying to pick her up off the floor. And I think that was the hardest. Yeah, it's certainly like top three, but like I think that was actually the hardest scene to do, because it was just so taxing and so so visceral. And to hear her, like I really asked Caitlin to go there. I said, you know, people say this shit all the time, but like, forget that there's a camera here. There was hardly anyone in the room. We only had room in the bathroom for the camera operator, the cinematographer, and even the director was out of the room watching on a screen. And the sound guy, the poor sound guy, is like tucked in the shower, like trying to get close to us.
And if people don't know about the poor sound guy.
No, the poor sound guy, and he's so beautiful. He's, he was wonderful. But yes, like very hard work to try and get a microphone as close to the action as possible without coming into frame, because then you have ruined the shot. But when you're doing such kind of intense, intimate work, really tricky situation. And I think we did maybe three takes at the most, which all went for quite a long period of time. She just let us go. Renee Mao, who directed, she just let us go for it until we exhausted ourselves, like we couldn't go any further. And Caitlin broke my heart, like holding her and hearing the sounds that were coming out of her was just, it was so familiar. And it was, so like those moments, I was like, no, am I taking things too far? But also at the same time, I'd been fighting for months of more of that. Yeah. Like I wanted from the beginning, when I was talking to the producers, I said, I want this to be unapologetically honest and unedited, in that sense that we get a real idea, a really truthful, honest idea of what it's like to be a palliative carer or a carer for a loved one at home, where you are just constantly faced with a new challenge and there's no timeline or schedule, and quite often you're completely on your own. And when you are trying to, for example, care for a full-grown adult and they slip on the floor, there's a phrase, dead weight. Yep. Dead weight is it's a real thing. Like you trying to get another human being off of the ground when they have lost their ability, they've lost their strength in themselves, is a situation I would never wish upon anyone. It's disturbing and frightening, and you feel hopeless because you're the strong one and you're the healthy one, and they are screaming in pain, and you can't give them relief. You can't get them off the ground. You know, those moments, I wanted that to be seen, because I think we have a really lovely Vaseline finish on all of this stuff in a lot of visual storytelling, where people are in a bed and there's no blood or other bodily fluids hanging around. You know, it's the body will surprise you in those moments. It really changes your life. So I wanted that to be as honest as possible. And I'd been fighting all the way through to keep those scenes in. And there were questions around some of them, not necessarily from producers, but, you know, there's a lot of voices and parties that are having a say in how your story is going to look and feel as you develop it, according to whether you're attached to a broadcaster or other investors. Like, everybody gets to have a say, and you need to be very clear on what you're prepared to fight for. And for me, it was always about maintaining the balance of the grotesque, the terrifying, and the heartbreaking with all of the humor.
Yeah.
I wanted that to really, like, throw people. I wanted the sensation of, you know, if, remember Honey, I Shrunk the Kids? If you got, like, thrown in a jar and someone just, like, just rattled you around yeah. for a bit, I want that sensation. Right. That's what I was seeking. It's pretty violent.
But yeah. no, yeah. But I totally get it. The when I've worked with comedians who maybe doing shows that go into darker places, the thing that I've always preached to them is, we need to make this story bulletproof for the middle Wednesday of the Melbourne Comedy Festival, where the energy of the start is over and the energy of the ending coming up is too far into the distance. And everyone's tired, and it'll probably be your smallest audience. And if you can make the work bulletproof for that night, then you're going to be fine for the rest of the festival.
Wow, what an amazing piece of advice. That's so cool. Yeah, and I know exactly what you mean. Not that I've ever done the comedy festival. I have witnessed many.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
And, you know, that slog, you know, halfway through, Jesus, like, watching people do Melbourne Comedy Festival or Edinburgh and, like, hanging around you guys and getting halfway through that season and just going, like, this is the killer.
Yeah, this is
you're right. It's the Wednesday night audience halfway through a season. How do you keep that?
Yeah, if you can navigate that. But that feels also the reason I bring that up is that kind of feels like what you had to do with your work as well. You had to have it in a place where you were so across it and you knew what you wanted to deliver. So then when you end up in these situations where suddenly you are kind of being triggered, you can fall back on the robustness of the content that you've created.
Yeah, I think here's another little tip, you know, like, just relating back to the idea of, if you are doubting yourself or your project or feeling burnt out, in these moments, like when you're in the middle of something or you're performing something and you're feeling like, oh God, what have I done, you make sure that you've created a mission statement and a really clear intention from the beginning of your project. What is the essence, the absolute, like the reduced version of that entire story? What is that singular drop that makes that story worthwhile telling? Yeah. Just have that so clear in your head, and you just return to that in those moments, and you go, right, I know what my intention is. That's all I need to worry about. Like, it just brings you back. It just brings you back to center. Even if you're not feeling it in that moment, you can trust the intention. Yeah. I think that can really drive you through those moments. And I knew very clearly what my intention was, and you don't know what the outcome of that is going to be or whether that intention is going to pay off or resonate for people. But just trusting the intention itself, because that core is so strong in you that it just carries you through. It's a bit like a life vest in those moments. Yeah. You just flip it on and let yourself float through the waves.
Yeah, yeah. What was the intention for this show? Are you able to share what that sentence was?
Um, For me, there were kind of like three sentences, but I won't give away exactly what it was because it's very personal.
Yes, But
the essence of it was, it was almost like a visual for me. It was being on the other side of an ocean, waving my hand at someone else who's going through the same thing on the other side of that ocean.
Yeah.
Thinking that they're the only one going through it, and it's me like waving at them going like, I see you.
Yeah.
We're part of the same ocean.
Yeah.
If that makes
sense. Yeah, no, it makes complete sense. And I think it has achieved that because, you know, the feedback I've gotten has kind of reflected what you just said to me as well. And right. I think very much at the end with... you come to this point where your character, Harriet, is, you know, there's the moment on the bridge, which I didn't think anything bad was going to happen, but I kind of had strength. I felt that she was stronger. Do you know what I mean? But I understood there was, this was my interpretation of it anyway, which was there was just this part of her that almost wanted to not exist for a moment. Do you know what I mean? And just kind of dissipate. And if she could have dissipated and just been caught with a breeze and just not existed, and then at some point just gone plop, 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 and I'm back. That to me was like, of course there was the drama that, you know, something bad could have happened by accident as well. That was probably my biggest fear with it. But that to me is the moment where she takes her biggest breath followed by her largest exhalation.
Yeah, you have just summed that up really eloquently. That's exactly what it is. You know, it's that for me, it kind of is a number of moments that happened in real life combined, and it was a way of being able to once again condense the essence of all of those individual moments that happened over that course of time. It distilled them down into this one moment where it really is, you know. And I hope this is okay to talk about because I realize this can be triggering for people. Mm. So if you're feeling a bit wobbly, maybe don't listen to this bit. But, you know, it's once again very personal. But that feeling of I just can't exist anymore. Mm. Like my journey is done. Just a moment of that can... This is the slippery slope of our mental health. In that moment, if you can get there, like if your experiences have led you to that point of feeling like you truly are done, like you just don't need to exist anymore, even if it's just that kind of that desire to not exist for a moment, not long term, not permanently, just the wish to stop, just to not exist for a moment, can be so powerful that it can make us do something that is irreversible.
Yes.
And that's the danger in it. And I do think that is so, you know, it's a really important conversation for me, and it's something that I'm continuing to explore in my new project. But, you know, I feel very lucky to be in a position where I can, like, truly lucky and grateful that I'm in a position to be able to talk about this as someone that went there and for whatever reason didn't end up dead.
Yeah.
And to realize, like, to look back on those moments and really go, like, really own it and be like, or just acknowledge that, wow, that was a really strong moment.
Yes.
But it is a moment, and it can feel so logical, that desire, that urge to just, for everything to just stop, can feel so, that pull can be so strong, but you can feel different in an hour. You can feel much less intense about it in 24 hours. Like it can, the logic can shift so quickly. And I wanted, and you know, that was a really, that was something that I was fighting for as well, because it is, it's tricky territory to be talking about suicidal ideation or a suicide attempt when we're entertaining people. But I wanted to be honest about it. I wanted to say, this is, I'm pretty sure I'm not alone in this. As someone that spent a long time caring for other people, this is part of that reality, is even though you know that you have this purpose and you've given so much of yourself to something that's really important or to someone that's really important, you can still lose your perspective on your own value. And it's just so important to acknowledge that it is a moment and it, this too shall pass.
Yeah. And it's also,
No,
that's completely fine. But the thing is that the moment that you kind of hit that point is strong, but what's equally strong is the moment afterwards when you have made the correct decision and the right decision and then found your way through it. And I agree with you. We look, this is my main issue with a lot of, mainstream entertainment, which is, we've forgotten that entertainment can be many things and it can make you connect with different emotions. Like entertainment doesn't just need to be happy, happy, joy, joy. Entertainment is meant to be lots of things. It's a safe space to go and experience emotions that you probably... they're difficult to confront in the real world, like whether it's depression or whether it's sadness or whether it's melancholy or whether it's anger. If you can go and experience them through art and you can and feel those emotions and you can be entertained by feeling them, and then you can kind of move on. Like I completely understand why one of the only kinds of movies that in the low budget world that are working these days are scary movies, horror movies, because it's a sensation that you can feel and just go, oh, and now I've experienced that, and now it's 2 p.m. and it's daylight and I'm going to get a drink.
Yeah. And that is the safety that we should be seeking in our entertainment industry, in our world of storytelling. That is the only safety we should be investing in, not the safety that says, well, we can't go to those dark places because, you know, it's just not going to sell enough tickets. It's not going to, it's not, you know, that's the bullshit safety realm that I was referring to earlier. You want to avoid that at all costs. If you're playing safe, or if you feel obliged to play safe in your creative outlet, it's an alarm bell. It's your red flag. You're moving away from your truth. Yeah. So give yourself a little slap and
get into it.
Get back to the intention.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think, you know, and this happens across the board in every walk of life where there's a term or a feeling that is very pertinent to certain types of people that gets co-opted by the broader part of society. So something like, like I'll talk about something that's kind of easier to talk about, which is OCD. Like there are people who really suffer from OCD, and then there'll be someone who just like moves their cup to one side and they go, oh, sorry, that's my OCD.
Oh my God. I'm so OCD right now. Like I have so many OCD traits, right? And you're like, fuck you. You don't know what OCD is.
No. That's not OCD, you know? And, and also I think the term being, triggered is one of those ones where there are some people who really have proper issues with that, and then there's some people who see something mildly not up to what they want to see, and oh, you're triggering me, and it's like, well, no, you're you're going to DEFCON 1 with your emotional response to something that is essentially fine.
It's such a slippery slope, and I've noticed this more and more, I guess, through social media and just the way that our world works now in terms of how we receive information and news. But, man, for the richness of the English language, it's also very, very binding. It's very restrictive because as soon as a smart marketing person cottons on to a particular word that has real resonance, that really hits you in the gut, they will co-opt that into a marketing spin, and you hear it all the time with, you know, you see people advertising their marketing businesses and like how to market yourself on social media and this kind of thing. And I hear all, I find this really tricky to hear about world building right. and storytelling, authenticity. The word authenticity has just been destroyed.
Yeah, it's become inauthentic.
It becomes inauthentic, exactly. And, you know, so it's just, I just find it interesting that, and of course, you know, all the algorithms are playing to our not enoughs in our head, yeah. like the things that make us feel not enough. You can guarantee that's what your algorithm is attuned to. Like it knows exactly what your weak spot is, and it's going to make you feel like you need to purchase more things yeah. around that.
Yeah.
And the language that is used around it, it fascinates me. And it's also, it's a really slippery slope when we're talking about, you know, anxiety, mental health, depression. I'm noticing at the moment, and this is probably a reflection of the, you know, my algorithm that is presented to me, ADHD. So like this seems to, I'm noticing that it seems to be relating to everything now, like all of your personal traits. There's an app that will help you
right.
monitor your undiagnosed ADHD or, you know, like, and or your OCD or your PTSD, yeah. you know, like it's, we really need to be careful. You know, as much as it is wonderful to be, to have all of this information so accessible to us in any given moment, do be mindful of like where these sources are, the sources of information are coming from, and if there is money behind it, yeah. Yeah, it might be trying to play with your heartstrings, or you know.
You know, I think we all learned about 15 years ago. If you're not sure about something medically, don't Google it. Because it's just going to be bad, and yeah. you should treat your mental health that way as well.
Totally, yeah. But it's just,
if you're not sure, yeah. don't just go and get the first app.
Oh God, please don't. But you know, like it's just you. But you see it now in, yeah. I kind of see this popping up in the storytelling realm as well. And yeah, like you said, as soon as a word. Like, I don't know, courage or something becomes like the thing that everyone clings to, it loses its strength. Yeah. It loses its authenticity. Yeah. Like, it becomes a questionable, like, is this courageous work or are you just saying that because that's the current like on trend term to yeah. use? It's
yeah. Everything gets reduced. It's George Orwell was correct. You know, it's the banning of words and the co-opting of words, so eventually we don't have enough at our disposal
yeah.
and therefore we can't express ourselves properly.
That's when it's, sorry.
Oh, no, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, and that's why it's important to listen to music
yes.
because it's like listen to some of your favourite artists and the lyricism. And I'm totally going to segue here intentionally because I need to thank you. You changed my morning. So for anyone listening, Justin sent me a link this morning to the new Arctic Monkeys album,
yes.
which actually to me sounds more like an Alex Turner, like an independent album.
Yes.
But holy fuck, I have just come out of surgery, which just massacred my uterus. But it is great to know and report that as of this morning, my ovaries are back in business. That fucking album, I tell you what, like Alex Turner and his, for me, his lyricism, he has a way of using really simple language or simple words and just making it so deliciously visual and yummy. It's so fucking...
And wasn't it a perfect album to listen to for the first time on a Sunday morning?
Yes, it was, sir. Yes, it was.
I wasn't sure it was out. And then I kind of knew it was coming. And then I saw that it was out and it was pretty late last night. And I thought, I'm a bit too tired. I'm not going to listen to it now. I'll listen to it in the morning when I'm pottering about doing things. And by the end of it, I think the last four tracks, I just... finished everything that I, you know, breakfast and that, and just laid on the lounge and just listened to the rest of the album. And I was like, that feels good. And funnily enough, getting back to, you know, how I said to you, I returned to something that I'd had a bit of doubt about. And even though, as I said, what I wrote, it felt a bit clunky, but I felt good because I'd gotten back into the swing of things. It did come out of just having that clear mind from listening to music.
Just listening to something different that's not your, not related to your line of thinking or work in a given moment, I think is just so key. But yes, also good to physically feel something in your body. Like if you're feeling stuck and, you know, that's, I can assure you, I was feeling things in my body. I was feeling things in organs I didn't know I had this morning. I don't know what, God,
that's great.
That guy.
I'm very happy for you, and I'm very happy for your massacred uterus. That
mate, I tell you what, there must be uteri. What's the plural of uteruses around the world that are just like throbbing
back in action
as of however many hours. And probably a few willies too. I mean, I don't know. I reckon there's
It's a pretty sexy album, and it's also I'm quite partial to a little bit of lounge music as well. You know, back in the days in Adelaide when the Tapas Bar used to be down on Rundle Street, and they used to do Thursday nights, which was all kind of lounge music and stuff like that, and it was great.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
Tapas.
Yeah,
wow. There's a blast from the past for anyone from South Australia.
They were the best of times. We should get going, but so what's up next? Is it the you're going on holidays? When's that happening?
Next
great.
Week. Just
to an island.
I'm going to an island, and I'm going to sit. I've just got like a tiny cabin on the beachfront, and I'm going to sit in the sun and give my body as much vitamin D as I have been lacking in the last 3 years of sitting indoors writing a show. Going to make up for all of that in a week, right? And just swim and not, I mean, I'll probably listen to some music, but I don't even know if I'm going to pick up a book, honestly. Yeah. I just need to stop feeling the pressure of needing to find words to make the next thing. I just need to stop for a minute. So that is what I will be doing next week.
Never underestimate the power of daydreaming, and maybe some classical music might be nice for you as well, you know.
I'm always up for that. It's gonna be all the music.
And then it'll be the actors in December, I guess.
December and also the Orgies, because we've got nominated for an Orgie, which is the Australian Writers Guild Awards. So I feel that is a huge honour for me to be acknowledged within my peers in the writing world. That is like beyond, I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's great.
It's the little show that could, like, it's just a baby version of all the other extraordinary work that's being acknowledged this year. But I feel really honoured to be a part of that. I'm very
You should feel honored, you should feel excited, and you should feel extremely proud of a Beginner's Guide to Grief. It's fantastic. And from my point of view, I'm wrapped for you as well. I'm so excited to see how everything's played out. And
thanks,
I can't wait to see what you do next after you've had some time to relax.
Yeah, I can't wait too.
All right. Thank you.
Can't wait to see that I actually make another thing at some point.
It'll happen, but we'll wait for you to get off the island. So then we'll start looking. So
survive the island first. Yeah.
All right. Sounds like a good thing. Thank you.
Thanks, Dustin. So great to chat.
Thank you to Annie for returning to the podcast and having such a beautiful discussion with me. Remember, if you haven't seen her show on SBS, you can still check it out. And I'd love for you to take the time to avoid all the big IP out there. Like, put Marvel aside, put Star Wars aside, put Harry Potter aside, put all of the stuff that has all of the money and a tiny amount of the creativity, and check out this gorgeous, funny show, A Brief Guide to Grief. If you'd like to do some reading, head over to my page at bigsquidpod.com and you can find a brand new Dispatches from the Fury Road blog, Spider Spider Burning Bright. And then on Thursday on the Patreon, my listeners will be getting a director's cut version of that blog. So lots of the gags and the wordplay and what inspired parts of the things that I was writing about. So you can find that on Thursday. Also, over at the website, you can find the new Beautiful Tales for the Disenchanted story, Living in the Shadow of Your Song. So you can read it, but there's also a link on the page that will take you to the audio version that has that fantastic production by Sean Allen. So that's all there as well. All free. I think the short story was maybe like an 8-minute read, and I think the blog's like a 4-minute read. Perfect for, you know, killing some time or, you know, just tuning out from the rest of the world, to be honest. I'll be back next week with a brand new Chitter Chatter on Monday, and then Ben Elwood returns for a new Space Podyssey. This time we're discussing the film 1984. Let's finish today with a quote from novelist Anne Lamott. "You will lose someone you can't live without, and your heart will be badly broken, and the bad news is that you never completely get over the loss of your beloved. But this is also the good news. They live forever in your broken heart that doesn't seal back up, and you come through. It's like having a broken leg that never heals perfectly, that still hurts when the weather gets cold. You learn to dance with the limp." Until then.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.